Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today I'm Darren Hefty. I'm going to be talking about fall nitrogen applications. Yeah, you may be thinking, wow, it's feeling cool in the northern states. Is it cool enough to put on nitrogen yet? We'll talk about that on today's program. We're also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. If you'd like to call in, talk about what's going on your farm, or if you've got an agronomic question. Getting a number of emails in for the Ag PhD mailbag already. You can send an email in as well, radio@agphd.com. Or, of course, you can find us on social media. We're on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. So lots of things going on. One thing that's happening on our farm again today is rain. And it's interesting. You think, well, what opportunities does that give us? Right now, I guess opportunities to work on equipment and fine-tune those things to make sure everything's going to run well once we get going again. Fortunately, we aren't getting too much rain, just kind of drizzly stuff, but I know there's certainly areas out there that are getting more. Hopefully, in your area, you're able to get some things done here in the near future. Now, the long-range forecast for our area, at least, is for improving weather. So once we get through this week, the long-range forecast looks much drier, which it's harder to be. Any wetter than catching some rain every day, but looks to be drier, looks to warm up a little bit, at least for the season. And if we get that, we'll dry out and we'll get back rolling again. There have been a lot of farmers pretty nervous about high moisture soybeans out in the field and hoping they'll dry down real soon before we have any issues. But so far, the plants are holding together well. I haven't really taken any calls on shattering or loss out in the field, which is very fortunate at this time. And hopefully when it dries out for good so we can get out and get everything harvested. I was just talking to a drainage tile contractor this morning, and I said, how are you doing? Are you able to get any work done? And he said, well, you know what? He goes, actually, yeah, we're getting a lot of work thrown at us, of course. But he said, we're able to get moving. We've got self-propelled machines with tracks, and we're putting only 3 pounds of pressure out there. So he said, it's actually, if you can walk through the field, I can get my tile machines through there. So I realize there's a limit to that when it's complete soup. But he said, yeah, we're able to keep going and at least get the main lines run. And then when it dries out, we can run lateral lines out through the field. But getting that main line in could help immediately moving some of this excess moisture that many areas have seen. So that was a real positive. I wasn't expecting that. The other thing that was interesting today, I was talking to a farmer who had driven past. It was actually a university research center. And he said, they got the crop out. But he said, my goodness, they left some big ruts in there. And wow, what a tough choice when you've got research plots where you really want to have the data. I get it that probably even is more important than, well, I just really want to get some crop harvested here. They wanted to get the research data, and they got it, at least as far as we know they got it. But anyway, so they left some big ruts, and he said, if I left ruts like that, what would I need to do to actually fix that? Because he said some of them are deep, and so often we see surface tillage that just kind of covers up those deep ruts, but they're still there, and you can find them for years. Dealing with those compaction issues is going to be another thing coming out of this harvest season where a lot of farms have been a little bit overly wet. You'll have to watch that as you get going. We got into a field on Saturday, and I got a heads up, hey, we're going to give it a try over in this field. And all of a sudden, we weren't doing anything again. And I said, well, what's going on? They said, yeah, there was still some standing water even through some of the draws. So there was no point trying to push it and make a big mess out there. So I know we're conscious about that, and every farm operation is, but at some point in a non-ideal world, you kind of have to give it a go if you think it's either this or we're not going to get harvest done. The other thing that I know we've been jumping on and really getting excited about getting done has been fertilizer application. We're talking fall nitrogen on today's program, but you know, whether it's spreading manure or commercial fertilizer, I really feel for all those guys that are doing custom app and applications, even for large operations, to get all that work done. I know everybody's going to be screaming for it at the same time. That's going to be a little bit of a challenge this year and some long hours, no doubt, but something to be aware of, too. One of the things when it comes to fertilizer, been getting a lot of questions about micronutrients all throughout the season here with plant tissue analysis and guys looking at, wow, I'm short in this. My plants are showing that we're short in zinc or copper or boron or manganese, a number of different micros. What do we do about that? And so often the fix is going to be, wow, we need to improve the level all the way across the field. And whether it's a banded application or a broadcast application, I know a lot of those are going to be happening this fall. Remember just about a week ago, we were talking to a real high-yield farmer in Illinois, and he said copper was one of the biggest things he was going to try and address this fall. And I thought that was quite interesting because normally you're going to hear one of the big three, N, P, or K, as, well, that one's probably my yield-limiting factor. And for more and more farmers, we're seeing a certain micronutrient or two being identified as really key contributors to problems that they're seeing in the field or caps on the top end of their yield. So the micronutrient thing is going to be big. If you're doing some soil sampling on your farm this fall, I would encourage you to take some sampling for micronutrients. Typically, we're just looking in the top 6 inches. So it's not that we have to do, 2 foot deep samples or something like that. But pull some samples in the top 6 inches and take no less than one sample per 5 acres. At least get out and see what's going on your farm and find out if there's some variance as you go across each field and then across the whole farm. Chances are, if you've been managing the farm fairly similarly, you'll see some of those same issues pop up nearly everywhere. Last thing that I was going to point out, getting a lot of comments from farmers around the country that they're having pretty good yield levels. Many guys are hitting, at least in spots, some of their highest yields they've ever had, which is great because some of those same guys were telling me how much disease problem they had and how, nope, it's not going to happen this year. So to hear some success even in the face of all the disease we faced in corn and soybeans and other crops this year is really encouraging. All right, we're going to talk fall nitrogen on today's show. We would welcome your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD as well. Stay tuned.
Farmers, wouldn't you love to have one set of concaves for all crops? With Estes Performance Concaves, you can. That means no more backbreaking work, changing concaves, or downtime. Plus, Estes Concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage and a cleaner sample. It's the best money you can spend on your combine. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and take back your bushels. That's 765-650-4131.
Tired of having to babysit your grain bins, waiting to manually turn on fans until the weather's just right? Have you ever kicked yourself for losing an opportunity to better manage your stored grain? Operating the fans on your bins just got a lot easier with the Steps GMS app. The Steps GMS temperature humidity switch is a low-cost solution that allows you to operate bin fans according to your specifications. For more information, find us on Twitter at StepsGMS or visit us at StepsGMS.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem's Mesotrion herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco and Vilify, two new products powered by Bellum. For application flexibility and season-long control, that's Evinco and Vilify, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from Hypro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, our phone lines are open if you'd like to call in, 844-44-AG-PHD. We're talking fall nitrogen on our show today. Happy to have Ben Johnson with us right now. He's with Farmer's Edge. Ben, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing well. I wish it would quit raining, though, so we could get some stuff done out in the field. But you know what? It might not be all bad because there are some guys that have gotten a lot of the work done, and they're kind of itching to get out with some fall nitrogen. And maybe this will hold them out a little bit longer, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, this year there's a lot of stuff, Ben, that I know people are talking about the digital tools that are available in agriculture. And one of the cool things has been estimating what you're going to need for nitrogen to finish out the crop. Can you talk about that, how those kinds of algorithms are developed and what farmers should be looking for going into the 2019 crop?
Right. Well, typically in the Midwest, most guys, they do put a little bit of nitrogen out in their on their farm. In the fall, it's just kind of a low base rate, and then they come back in the spring, and they supplement that either pre-planting or side dress or both, if you're following some of the 4R nutrient stewardship practices. But what our tools are geared to do are to help kind of help you figure out how much has mineralized in the soil based on weather data and other factors. And so when you can do that, you can more accurately get a more accurate rate of nitrogen out there so that you're not over-applying, which, I mean, it helps with your overall bottom line, and it also helps with a lot of these environmental issues that are out there. So I've always felt that if we address this economic issue, all of these environmental issues that pop up, like the hypoxic zone in the Gulf or the stuff going on in Lake Erie or the Chesapeake Bay, all that stuff will just go away.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it that we're being watched closely on the farm with what happens. And right or wrong, we're getting a lot of the blame for any issues that are out there with water quality.
Right.
You mentioned the mineralization rates, and I was thinking about this, and I know one of the things that you talk about a lot is having weather stations on farms and what a value there is there just to catch some of the differences in localized weather. This had to be kind of a crazy year for that, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. We saw all kinds of crazy stuff go on, and it really shows that having a weather station on your farm is very much superior to relying on the local airport's data that could be 10, 20, 30 miles away.
Yeah, we see that on our farm, and we'd always thought, I know growing up, of course, we didn't have a lot of the technology available back then that we have today, but we were only 10 miles away from an airport, and we thought, oh, that's pretty close, until we actually got a weather station on our farm, and there's a weather station just a few miles north of us, and it's like, wow, there is a world of difference with three stations within 10 miles. It's amazing. And even the last couple of weeks here when we've had some rains, we've still been able to pick and choose where we're able to harvest because we see, oh, that field's 7 miles over and they only got a tenth of an inch of rain and we got an inch and a half here. So that's been kind of nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's just really amazing on just how patchy certain rainstorms can be. It's not just some homogenous event that happens.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if a lot of the extreme weather talk that we hear is just that we're finally able to measure that and measure some of these localized areas that we just assumed there wasn't that much difference, but now we're seeing it. And speaking of that, you know, you look at this year's planting season and what a challenge that was in some areas of the country. The growth modeling now that we're able to see with digital agriculture here, where I look at an app on my phone and it says, hey, I'm at V6 corn, and I know I've got to get a certain app done by V7. It's been pretty
right.
Accurate this year. How do you do that? And how do you get this better and better each year?
Well, it's magic.
Well, it's a lot better than me driving around like to every single field every half a day. I know that.
You bet. And that's really what all this is geared to do, is to help you manage your operation a lot better. Instead of driving around, just pull up your laptop or your tablet and just kind of see, like you said, hey, I need to make this application by V7. And you just kind of see where you're at with your different growth stages, and you can make a plan from there. And instead of spending half a day, you spent like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's been really nice to well, when with our farm too, we've got some help on our farm and to be able to direct guys to different fields and even for the scouting, it's been nice. You know, with daily satellite imagery, that's really changed things for us on our farm and just seeing how things are progressing throughout the season. Is part of that helping with estimating nitrogen loss and then also the mineralization you talk about?
Well, it all does feed into that. So, yeah, I mean, we do use imagery a little bit, but really the main drivers are that weather data, rainfall data, and all that good stuff. And also having your nitrogen rate that you plugged in there. So you kind of figure out how much you have in the tank, in the soil, so to speak. And when you finally get ready to pull the trigger to make that last application of nitrogen, you've got a pretty good idea of what an accurate rate's going to be. And be able to vary it across different zones in your field. So that high-producing zone of the field isn't going to get the same rate as that low-producing zone of the field, which obviously is going to really help impact your bottom line.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And getting those zones set up right is a real key. We've had a lot of farmers asking questions about that going into this fall. You know, we talk about zone sampling. I know Farmers Edge does zone sampling and also grid sampling to help farmers try to set up zones. When you're pulling in brand new yield data, you've got imagery that you've had coming in, you know, for many, many years now. I think, what do you have, 10 or 15 years worth of imagery you can pull back on. There's just a lot of data to help make these zones. It's so much easier than it used to be, but it's still a lot of work. So what are some of the tips for farmers that are trying to set up zones on their farm? What should they be looking for and using as some factors to help set up these zones?
All right. Well, I mean, it all comes back down to the data you collect yourself. I mean, having good, accurate yield data is always going to help you out. So instead of just jumping in the combine and just going, it really helps to calibrate your yield monitor, doing that right. So then if you have that layer, that's a really good, accurate layer. And then also supplement that with imagery and all that other good stuff. And then that's really going to set you up to really create some really great zones out in your field.
You know, and just having multiple year data is really key too. Kind of like we talk about, well, you don't pick a hybrid just based on, well, it did really good one time in one field. You want to see what's happened over a period of time to try to figure that out. Hey, I hear that you're driving through Iowa today, Ben. What are you seeing out there? How's harvest coming along and anything you're noticing?
I'm noticing a lot of fields where there's no machinery in them. So it's pretty much at a standstill. There's a lot of crop out in the field yet. It's been pretty wet. It's been just kind of raining, and raining some more. In fact, up where I farm with my dad, the rivers up there are at their record levels for October at the moment. So it's wet.
Yeah, it's going to be a question when this freeze up comes this year. Hopefully, a lot of that water has a chance to get away too, so we don't have big problems come next spring.
Right.
All right, we've been talking with Ben Johnson with Farmer's Edge. Ben, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
Yeah, you bet.
We're talking fall nitrogen on today's program. We're also taking your calls and questions. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. You know, when it comes to fall nitrogen, we've done a lot of different things on our farm over the years, and Brian always likes to preface this, and I think this is a little bit because he knows he's going to get criticized for saying it, but he always starts off, well, we're in a low rainfall part of the country, and we've got really heavy soils with high organic matter levels. Now, I would say this. We do have heavy soil. We do have pretty high organic matter levels. But we're still awfully cautious about where we're going to put out anything in the fall that might leach. Nitrate nitrogen especially being one of those things. So we'll talk about some different practices as we go along on today's program. And again, we'd also like to hear from you. So please call in or send us an email if you'd like to get your comments on the show as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Yeah. If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contans No Risk Guarantee. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say, Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
BASF presents 5 Things to Do After Harvest. Number 5, read all mail received since April. Number 4, put on your marketing hat. Number 3, clean 4 tons of dirt off your equipment. Number 2, clean 2 pounds of dirt off your boots. And number 1, analyze your results and plan for next year. From all of us at BASF to growers everywhere, thanks for all your hard work during Harvest 18. Grow smart with BASF. We create chemistry.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about fall nitrogen applications and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. I've got Aaron Woolard with us right now down in Missouri. He's a farmer and a soil fertility consultant as well. Aaron, how are you doing today?
Well, thank you. Yourself?
Doing well, doing well. So what's the fall bringing for you down there? Are you guys catching all the rain too, or are you able to get some things done?
We're just to the southeast of that stalled front, and we have had record high temperatures for essentially 5 to 6 days in a row.
Wow.
Really dry, really hot.
I wish that would change a little bit and come our way. That would be okay right now.
Well, it's going to change for us also, I believe. The forecast is for us to get some significant rainfall Wednesday, and temperatures will fall behind that front coming through.
Hey, you got me thinking here. Okay, you guys have been pretty dry this summer, correct?
Yes.
How does that impact you when you're pulling soil samples for guys this year? I know they talk a lot about, well, the tests are quite different if it's excessively wet or excessively dry or something throughout the season. Does it change anything with what you're doing?
If it's been excessively dry, whereas grass isn't growing, you know, it's brown and not growing at all, it'll give you a high pH reading, which will give you false indications of needing to lime. So it would be best to hold off on pulling cores until the you get some rain to make the grass grow again and give it a couple of weeks for the microbiology in the soil to start coming back alive. And when this grass starts growing again, would be my recommendation. And that's how I pull samples. We got a couple of good rains a couple of weeks ago, and our grass is growing right now. But if we don't get some rain soon, it'll be too dry to pull again. But right now, it's all right in my area.
You know, for the guys that like to do fall nitrogen, and I know we've got a guy that's down in northern Missouri that does custom anhydrous application, and it seems like farmers are more comfortable with anhydrous in the fall than other sources of N. What about that? If you're in a dry situation, that's probably not the best time to be doing that either, is it?
I wouldn't think it would make much difference either direction as far as fall application. What's going to determine whether or not you retain that nitrogen is the winter over the weather, or excuse me, the weather over the winter. A lot of rainfall, a wet winter, you're going to lose a lot of that nitrogen.
Yeah, that's always the risk guys are taking, no doubt about it. Once you put it out there, you don't have any control anymore as you're going. Are you noticing anything as you're doing soil sampling this year? Are you seeing any nutrients stand out or micronutrients that you're having issues with?
The usual suspects, sulfur, boron, and we got an area over on the west side of Crowley's Ridge that has a lot of sodium in it. That's still showing up on guys that haven't got it limed out yet. And outside of that, it's pretty normal, basically speaking, everywhere else. You're never going to be able to keep, at least in my experience, you'll not be able to keep boron and sulfur. It takes a long time to build those two, as they use a lot of them. You know, 150 bushel corn crop will take 40 pounds of nitrogen per acre, sulfur per acre off the ground. So if you're not putting 40 pounds of sulfur each year on a corn crop, 150 bushel corn crop, you're going to lose ground. And boron is somewhat the same way. It leaches. A whole lot of it doesn't leave in the crop, but a lot of it leaches. And it's important in soybeans. It takes the starch out of the leaf and puts it into the fruit. So if you have really small, shrunken soybeans in a more wet year, that could be a sign of your boron getting low.
Interesting. Yeah, the boron is one I know we're working on our farm too, when we think about that in heavy, high organic matter soils, how much do you think you can really actually hold? A lot of the soil tests we look at from farmers around the country are looking at a half a part per million of boron, maybe 6/10, 7/10 at the most, and we know that's not enough. But with high organic matter, can we hold enough, or is it something that you're just always stuck making applications every season?
You're going to be best served by that high organic matter to hold it, for sure, as humus will hold all types of nutrients. But I would say, as a general rule, you're going to need to apply it every year, you know, probably to the tune of 15 pounds of 14.3% borate every year. And then you may want to consider a foliar application, too, if you're in a high management situation for grain crops.
Yeah, we sure saw guys doing that this year with the foliar apps, and it was interesting because some of the farmers were taking plant tissue tests as well, just seeing if they were actually getting it into the crop. And it seemed like many of those, unless we were in the dry areas, we were able to push it into the crop fairly well. The question is just, how do you keep it at a high level? It seemed like there's a lot of fluctuation. Some guys were getting it into the plant, and a few weeks later, they're really short again. And there are a few guys that once they got it in the plant, it seemed like they held off pretty well. Is there any trick to that, or is it just a matter of what kind of soils you have and what kind of year you get?
I would say the trick to it would be to soil apply some so that the plant has a source through the root system. And then use the tissue test, like you say, and make more than one application. If you don't put it on the soil, and if you put it on the soil, you may be able to get away with one application. I like to use boric acid up to 4 pounds per acre as a foliar.
Yeah, we've been trying on our farm, doing some soil apps. It's been our primary means and doing a little bit of foliar work too. Our foliar work this year turned out better than it has ever for us. This was the best year for us getting that in. One problem that we saw, though, we've got a little bit of our ground that's on river bottom, and I know you certainly deal with this where you're at in Missouri with flooding. And what do you recommend for growers that have seen some flooding, whether it was during the summer or even some of these late storms that we've had towards the end of the season? How do you go about getting that ground back into good shape and getting the soil microbes working for you again?
They're naturally occurring. You just got to give them some oxygen and time, depending on the type they are, what temperature they like, if they're wintertime and summertime. But they'll come back naturally, as long as you got some air in the soil. So I would probably say aerate it somehow, maybe a deep tillage or maybe a chisel plow and let it air, and they'll come right back.
You know, in terms of soil sampling in those fields, have you noticed anything? I mean, do you see just extreme issues with any of the leachable nutrients, or do you kind of see normal soil tests when you get back into that kind of ground?
Around here, we'll see an increase in potassium and a slight increase in phosphate, and we'll get a bump of nitrogen, and you'll lose lots of sulfur and boron in the flooded ground.
So right back to where you were talking about before, that you're kind of seeing a lot of that sulfur and boron being low and guys needing to manage those going into the 2019 crop.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of different situations that guys have had thrown at them, and you've certainly been in one of those dry areas this year. Hopefully you guys will catch a little rain here and get things charged back up again. And then of course, we got guys that are running into flooding like crazy in certain areas too. So lots of things to watch out for. Been talking with Aaron Woolard. He's a farmer and a soil fertility consultant down in Missouri. Aaron, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You bet. You as well. Talking about fall nitrogen application on today's show. We're also taking your calls and questions. Getting a lot of fertility questions in. We'll try to get to some of those a little bit later. The Ag PhD mailbag is open at radio@agphd.com if you want to send an email in or send a soil sample in that way. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay tuned.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We're talking fall nitrogen and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got a local expert on here, too, to see if I'm right about this whole South Dakota normally arid climate and fall applications. Got our friend Anthony Bly with SDSU on. Anthony, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome, Darren. Good to be on.
I was joking earlier a little bit, but I'm pretty serious about this, too. My brother sometimes will say, well, you know, we're in a dry climate. We've got heavy soils, high organic matter, all this stuff going for us, so we can get by with a little bit of fall nitrogen. And he won't go so far as to say we can put the whole works out, but he'll say we can probably get by with a little. Is that true, or are we just fooling ourselves?
Well, you know, speaking from the university point of view, we've had some research that show that over the long term, that fall applied in is not performing as well as spring or side dressed applied in, Darren. So depends on the year, of course, and that's a long-term average that I'm talking about.
So, sure, sure.
If you hit it right, you know, it can work, but we don't know. And you were just talking about this arid climate that we're kind of lacking.
Yeah,
and
we'd like to have the arid climate back for a little bit.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yep.
Well, okay, so here we go. We're heading into this wet fall, and you know, we're just encouraging guys, let stuff dry out a little bit. Don't force it. It's only the, you know, first week of October. It's not like we have to go crazy just yet. What are you talking to guys about? Because I know you got a lot of guys that like reduced tillage, and there's so many advantages to that. But if we mess it up by putting a whole bunch of ruts out there, we're going to create years worth of problems.
Honestly, from what I see going on in the field this year and the conditions that we have, I can't recommend putting on fall in unless that price is so advantageous, you know. You know, like you can't pass up that deal. And I think what's going to happen is we're going to be so focused on getting the harvest done that we hopefully it doesn't happen, but I think we're going to run out of time. But I agree with you. Don't wreck these fields. Don't rut them up. Consider the compaction. You know, we have wet conditions. That's just not good. And I think about anhydrous knives going through and not sealing that furrow and losing gas out there as well. I know it takes water to convert that anhydrous, but, you know, we've got to shut that knife trench too as well. And that's harder to do when the soil is wet.
Yep, it sure is. Okay, so you get a lot of fall fertility questions, and guys like to talk about P&K. We hear a lot about P&K in the fall, and whole different animals than what nitrogen is. We aren't as worried about the leaching component, but, you know, hey, we've got some pretty saturated soils. How does that change what guys should be doing and thinking about with P&K in you know, pretty soggy, wet soils with high water tables and a potential that, man, if we got some late rains or some heavy, wet snow, they could be pretty soggy really quick again.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, that P and K, that's not as much of a concern as the multi-nutrient nitrogen. You know, once it hits that wet soil and that pellet dissolves and we're that soil's becoming attached to the soil, you know, we're okay. It's when we get to the soils that become more frozen, and you know, if we keep up this rainfall pattern and we have some frozen soils and some runoff situations, then we're going to be losing some of those nutrients in that runoff.
Hey, we just had a soil fertility consultant from Missouri on, and he said he's seeing a lot of really low sulfur and low boron tests in his area, and we've seen this on our farm too. What are you getting for questions from farmers about sulfur and boron, and what kind of advice do you have about dealing with some of those nutrients that maybe don't stick around very well?
Well, sulfur is one of those that I think most producers are putting on. You know, in South Dakota, we've taken it out of the precipitation because we've cleaned up these coal-fired power plants really well. And so, especially in the no-till acres where we're not mineralizing the sulfur out of the organic matter, I think it's really important. And, you know, our experience in South Dakota is 20 pounds of sulfur goes a long ways. And so that's kind of where we're at with that. And we're seeing soybeans in a no-till situation respond to sulfur as well. I mean, it's usually just the corn, but I think we're running out of that mineralization from the organic matter, if you will. And so I just think it's important there as well. Boron, I don't like to talk about, Darren. We have not... I heard you talking about soil tests being low, and I just want to point one thing out, is that the analysis for that has really changed in the last 5 to 10 years. And so the calibrated work on boron from the university was done on a hot water extract. And if I'm you know what I'm talking about there a little bit, most of the labs aren't doing that test. And so when we saw the regularity of boron tests come around, they just kind of went down, and I really think it has to do with the ICAP, ICP analysis that they do, and it's kind of a tag-along nutrient, and I think it's naturally going to be at that level. So coupled with the fact that we have not seen responses to boron in a plot situation or verified any deficiency in the field, we're still really at the beginning stages of that nutrient, and despite producers trying it, putting it on, and saying that they need it, you know, we had several sites out 2 and 3 years ago and could not find a response on corn and soybeans with boron. But we keep trying, and so I would ask growers to proceed with caution with that one. We can get on too much, and we can be hard on some of our grass crops. And just proceed with caution when it comes to boron.
Yeah, we certainly don't have all the answers there yet. What about with this nitrogen and with all the rain that we've had? I mean, I've seen a lot of predictions, and I suppose some areas are probably already there, that this is the record year in our home state of South Dakota for many growers. What about this nitrogen in this fall when we're out doing some testing? Certainly the 0 to 6 inch test isn't going to tell us the whole story. Are you encouraging some deeper tests before anybody really considers this nitrogen?
Yes. Yeah, you know, the university's always stood behind the 2-foot test to see what's there to 2 feet, because corn roots can extract that. But, if we have really wet conditions between the time you sample and the time the crop needs it, a resample is almost called for there. But that nitrogen in the top 2 feet is like money in the bank. In fact, if you look at CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations that are vulnerable aquifers, their permit requires them to sample to 4 feet.
Really?
And so taking credit for nitrate deeper in the soil is a good practice to use.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt about it. There's certainly some out there. And I would assume we'd see some of those other nutrients like sulfur and boron as we pull those deep tests too, correct? Do you recommend testing for all those or just nitrogen deep?
Nitrogen and sulfur. And then if you're wheat country and you're interested in chloride, I would do that one as well.
All right, very good. Well, Anthony Bly with South Dakota State. Anthony, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
Yes, it was my pleasure, Darren.
We're talking about fall nitrogen applications on our show today. Also getting a number of nutrient questions coming into the Ag PhD mailbag, radio at agphd.com if you want to send in a soil test or send in a question there. You know, when we talk about what we're doing in our farm with sulfur and with boron and nitrogen, these nutrients that we're concerned about, we do have some river bottom ground. We're not putting anything out on that ground for sure. We just know there's a risk there, especially like this year, we've got a really high water table right now, but and flooding could occur at any time. As we were talking with Ben Johnson earlier in the show, he was saying their rivers are at record high levels right now, and boy, there's more rain on the way here in the next few days, so who knows what could happen. We don't want to put leachable nutrients out in a place where we could potentially lose them, but we want to keep an eye on ground that's high and dry and really safe, and we know for sure we're going to be getting in there with corn next year. We want to take a look at some of these things and even consider fall application where it's appropriate. We'll talk more about that coming up right after this break. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass Agronomic Rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/fmcfreedompass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say, Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
Hey everybody, come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We've been talking about fall nitrogen, and we've gotten a couple of questions in here I wanted to get into in the Ag PhD mailbag. First one comes from Jeremy, and he said, will y'all be putting on any soil clinics this year? Jeremy, we are always talking about soils. You know, we're definitely focusing on that with our fall Ag PhD TV show programs. We're talking about specific nutrients really all through the fall, so certainly check those out. You can find a lot of our video content on YouTube as well. And then on Ag PhD Radio, we're talking about soils almost every day. We've got a lot of content out there. We're also going to be doing some soils clinics as part of some of the other clinics that we're doing. So we don't have any that we're only talking soils. There are some other issues that we definitely want to talk about. But you'll notice if you go to agphd.com, click on the events tab, we've got all of our winter speaking engagements, at least to this point, up on the site, so you can see what we're doing and what some of the topics are going to be. We've got a couple of them coming up, specifically right here on our home farm that we'll be doing. I'm trying to think what we've got for titles for those. What Your Fertilizer Dealer Won't Tell You, that would be one of them. And we're going to talk, that's probably the one that you'll hear the most about soils. We're going to focus a lot on it at that one. And we've also got one, Secrets of High Yielding Fields. And we're going to talk about, okay, what's different and what's it take to get my fields looking like that. So there'd be a couple of them coming up in January and February that I would say would be the most soils information. But anytime you want to, send your soil samples in. We'll walk them through on our show. We really enjoy doing that and trying to help guys out that way. And at least have another farmer to bounce some things off and get some ideas from. So yeah, anytime you want to, Jeremy, send them to us. Otherwise, if you can make one of those clinics, we'll be definitely talking about soils then as well. I get another one from Bradley here, and Bradley is in Wisconsin. Looks like he's fighting a lot of the same things we are. He said, regarding fall applications of potash broadcast spread on what I would call super saturated soils in west central Wisconsin, on some ground that has some pretty good slope, I'm wondering how concerned I have to be about loss. I'm going to be at earliest a couple of weeks before our application, as nothing is off here yet, no crop harvested. So do I apply it this fall or do I wait until spring? A lot of challenges there, no doubt about it. If you're super saturated and you have a lot of slope, your risk of having some runoff is pretty high. I've seen this in a lot of areas. I know I've worked with a number of producers right along the South Dakota-Nebraska border where we've got a lot of slope, and you'll see soil test readings really high in the valleys, not very high in the hilltops of the side hills. So I definitely would not want to do that. If I was just going to leave it lay on top, which you're probably doing since you've got a lot of slope there, then I would wait. But the problem with waiting until spring is getting that into the crop, especially if you don't get a lot of moisture that year, is tough. So having it out there longer is a good thing. So yeah, you're kind of in that catch-22 that you got to use your own experience to make that judgment call. If it was me and everything is super wet and I'm putting it on late and I think, wow, I'm going to have snow melt and I'm going to have maybe some late season rains and it doesn't have anywhere to go other than run off the top, I think I would wait if it was me. Thanks for the question. You know, one of the things, too, that we've been talking about on our show is I'm glad you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, but I hope you're staying on for the next half hour afterwards to catch some of Shark Farmer Radio. We've got Rob Sharkey with us right now. Rob, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing, Darren?
Good, good. So your harvest all wrapped up. You got everything all done for the fall. So now it's pretty much take it easy time.
I'm almost packed for the beach, buddy. Now, I mean, we are well ahead of schedule here. We've missed a lot of the rains that most of the Corn Belt has. So I'm currently sitting 100% done with soybeans and about 25% done with corn.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, you're in good shape then. Once we get the beans out, then everybody calms down here. Our corn is holding together pretty well, but it's been interesting. Some of the drought-stressed areas are seeing some ear drop and some plants falling apart and that kind of thing, so that's no fun. Hey, so when we get our minds off of production agriculture and get into just, hey, what's going on the farm level? There's a lot of guys that are really struggling out there, and I think it really helps them to hear from other farmers and hear what's really going on the inside. What do you got coming up this week for us on Shark Farmer Radio? Who are some of the guests you got coming, and what kind of topics are you hitting up?
You see, this is the thing. I mean, you guys are so good. I mean, I talk to you guys and, you know, like Alex, and you have guests that are lined up for like 2 weeks. I called my guy this morning.
Perfect.
I said, hey, Glenn, you want to be on? So I've got Glenn Newcomer on today. Tomorrow, excellent, though, I do have a, I think, the only female Case IH equipment saleswoman in Ontario, in Canada, the whole Canada. So it'd be interesting to talk to her about breaking through some boundaries and that. But, yeah, we're working on others. We want to talk about, you know, just how the harvest is going, how you're dealing with maybe not having the best marketing this year. Just you know, things along the lines of real life.
Yeah, the real life issues are certainly there. I've been talking to a lot of ag bankers, and they're pretty thankful of the yield levels that a lot of guys are having because, man, there's been a struggle. There's no doubt about it. Hopefully things turn around for us pretty soon here, but it's really hard. I don't know if it's just being a guy, it's hard talking about those things, or if it's being a farmer talking about those things, especially when you're on a multi-generation farm like you are and I am. What is it? What is it with guys that we just have trouble talking about some of those things?
Well, you know, we could blame our parents because, right, everybody's stubborn. You nailed it right on. Hey, you're first year a guy and then you're a farmer. It's like the two most stubborn things in the world, and you put them together and here we are. Yeah, we just, you know, it's anytime you talk about like something that's not going right or whatever, it's almost like you're admitting defeat, and no one wants to do that. But yeah, it's, you know, like for me, it's kind of nice to go up to like John Deere and just listen to what everybody else broke, so I don't feel so bad on my farm.
That's right. And you know, we were just talking this morning, I was talking with an agronomist, and he's like, man, I was talking to this farmer, and he was telling me he was getting 230 bushel average across his whole farm. And I work with the guy right across the fence, and his corn looked not as good as the guy I'm working with, and he was only getting 210. Do you think he's telling the truth? Like, I don't know. Have you heard any fish stories lately? I don't know what to believe on some of those either, but we've got yield monitors. I don't know if that makes a better better storyteller out of us or what.
I'm guessing the guy that yielded 210 wasn't listening to your radio show.
Hey, now, well, it just depends on where you're at. And, you know, and here's the thing, too. Every operation's different, and I don't know how to run your farm better. I can just give you some ideas of what we're doing and what we hear other guys doing that are working. And you know, you can try them out or not try them out. It's up to you. And maybe it won't work in your area. Maybe it will. I'm just trying to come up with some new ideas.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, we're in a business that just so many things can get you, and you can do everything you did the year before, and something weather-wise or whatever will come up and bite you. It, you know more than anybody. There is science to it, but there's also an art to it.
So what are you hearing from your radio show? Are you getting some feedback?
No.
I'm getting feedback. Yeah. I'm hearing other guys comment, hey, who's this guy you got on after you now? He's kind of fun to listen to.
It's been fun. You know, it is such a completely different medium than I'm used to with the podcast. It's fun getting used to it. It's fun working with your studio. So, I mean, we're enjoying it. I think we're hitting on some things that people like to hear. You know, it's definitely a learning experience. I'll say that much.
No, I agree. I think it's something that's needed, though, too. And you hear a lot about markets and weather and farm news. And Brandon and I have been talking a lot about agronomy and certainly that's important too, but just hearing the inside stories of what's actually happening on these farms has been really great. So I'd encourage all of our listeners, stay on the line here. Stay listening to this channel a little bit longer. Catch the Shark Farmer Radio Show today with Rob Sharkey, who I've been talking to here. You're going to enjoy it. Hey, Rob, thank you so much. Good luck on your show today.
Thank you, Darren.
All right, well, we've got to wrap things up here, too, in the meantime. With one other note, we've got some additional content in the Ag PhD Insider Magazine. It's our new bi-monthly magazine. We've got articles, pictures, guest writers, including Rob Sharkey, that'll inspire some great ideas for you on how to improve your profits on your farm and just what you're doing in general so you can have more fun farming. That's what our goal is. You can check this out at agphdinsider.com and subscribe if you would like. Thanks for all the questions that came in today. Really appreciate it. Only got to a couple of them. We'll try and get to more here later in the week. Thanks to you for listening today. And be sure to join us each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. And stay tuned right now for Shark Farmer Radio.